we're just sitting next to the harbour in Bristol, right in the centre here, and my milk is coming. And we're just sitting next to the harbour in the centre of Bristol here, with a couple of the boaters. We've got Mandy Sharman and Sabina Douglas. Can you both of us tell us how you ended up living in the city, in the harbour, on a boat?
Okay, so about 12 years ago, was saving for a house, realised that was probably quite unachievable, met my partner and thought, what could we do with a little bit of money? So we bought a small boat, and that was our space. 12 years later, now we've got a bigger vessel, and we're a bit more vested in the harbour with a couple of kids on board as well. So,
I mean, it's made a difference to your family, particularly because of the it's basically a housing crisis going on, isn't there?
Yes, yeah. It's just completely unachievable to think that I could buy a home in this area where my kids are now at school. So having the boat in the harbour is the only means of accommodation that I've got.
So, Sabina, what about you?
I had a boat here on the weekends, and I loved it so much, staying on a boat on the weekend. I thought, I don't want to go back and live on land during the week, so I bought a boat to live on.
What is it about the boat that you found it so attractive then?
The peace, the next to nature, it was the tranquility, the movement, mainly, the movement of the boat, and you look outside and everything's moving outside. It's so static on land. I just love the water. I love the movement.
Okay, and now there's been this announcement of the big hike in fees here. What do you make of that? What was your reaction?
We were stunned. It was a secrecy. We'd been told since 2019. We knew there was a review taking place, and we'd been told from 2019 that we would be consulted. And it was only because one of our members of BBCA happened to be browsing the website and noticed there was a cabinet meeting on the following week to rubber stamp proposals for fee increases. It's the first we've heard of it, no consultation.
How much?
Ranging from sort of 10% increase right up to 350% increase.
Now that's a lot of money, but not if it's not much to start with. I think, isn't the idea that maybe that people who are paying council tax, that you should be paying much more, like the sort of rates that they're paying?
That would seem fair, wouldn't it? Boats are exempt from council tax. That's like national policy. If the local authority wanted to implement that, I believe that they could. But this increasing mooring fee way exceeds any sort of council tax add-on. I mean, one of the vessels in the harbour has been quoted with these new fees, triple, so she'll potentially be paying triple the highest band of council tax mooring fees per year. And that money that goes on those mooring fees isn't going for council services and the things that you should be able to access via council tax payments. It's ring-fenced into this harbour pot, which is the council keep quoting. It's been mismanaged and everything over the last 20 years. So who's to say that this increase in fees isn't just going to be mismanaged for the next decade and we're just pouring our money in?
What about the actual amounts, though? What sort of range are people paying annually?
Probably for a small vessel, £1,500, maybe. For a larger vessel, £3,500. So if those fees are going to triple, my personal mooring fees are going from £2,500 up to nearly £7,000.
Now, I'm also joined by Joan Booth, who's a freelance journalist here in Bristol and a blogger. Joe, there's been a very strange sort of run-up to this, which is the mayoral system. They've had a good old look at the harbour. They're saying, right, we're going to change what we're doing here. And there's been a series of looks at it, even people employed specially to do that. And the end result of all of that, early this year, was supposed to be a consultation. Some ideas put forward by the council, put out for consultation, but that hasn't happened. They've just said, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, so they've been looking at the harbour since Marvin Rees, the current mayor of Bristol, actually came into power. So in 1718, that year, they were going to spend £1.6 million just on maintenance of the harbour. Then in 2019, when Penny Fell, the new director of commercialization, started on board, she had some new ideas, and then they agreed to spend another nearly £1 million, £885,000 that year to fix the harbour. Then the following.
Sorry, but how was this money spent? Was it spent on these consultants, or was it spent on doing things?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the question, because then by the following year, 2020, this has been 4 years into Rees's administration, they had they said they were going to provide a harbour review to see how the money has been spent, to see what they were going to do and how they were going to move forward. Well, that failed to be completed by the time it was supposed to, so they outsourced it to a consultancy for £130,000. And that was due to be published in October 22, a few months ago. No one's seen it. I still don't know if it has been published, but over that time, £3 million has been spent on the harbour since 2017. And the latest price increase doesn't seem to follow from anything actually being published. We don't know what the review said. It's not public. We don't know what they're proposing, how much money is in this harbour, you know, in this harbour pot. And we don't know what they're doing.
So who's this? Did you say her name was Penny Fell? Who is this person? Because it sounds to me as if they're the kind of key person, but she's not around anymore.
She's not around anymore. She was actually in charge of the harbour when Colson statue fell, and she was part of the kind of plan to get it out of there. But she was also responsible for signing off the Bristol Energy Company accounts 7 days before the company was found to be insolvent. And then that following summer, she left quietly.
I mean, just give us an idea, if you can, Joanne, of the backdrop of the way that the city council was run now, because we've got this mayor system with George Ferguson to begin with. He was quite inclusive. He tried to include all the, you know, existing parties, the Lib Dems, the Greens, Labour, Conservative, on his cabinet. But since Marvin Rees, the Labour mayor, has taken over, things have changed, haven't they? And the mayor has got a lot of power, it seems, almost like a US-style mayor.
He does. He has executive power. I mean, the only two things he doesn't really control entirely are licensing and planning. But even there, we've seen from FOIs that behind the scenes, the mayor's assistant and the mayor try to control what the planners do. So when an application fails, the planning officers, you know, apologize to Marvin. And there's a major projects spreadsheet where they keep track of all the things that they want to push through, like St. Mary LaPorte development, also the Empire Fighting Chance Boxing Club is on there, the one that the mayor gifted the land of to his own boxing club, Empire Fighting Chance. But what's interesting about the harbour at the moment is the consultation that didn't take place before fees were hiked. So we had a very similar situation in the Western Harbour, a new project that's meant to have 3,000 homes built just past the harbour, Cumberland Basin. And they said they were going to do an engagement rather consultation. Consultation is an actual process that can be taken to judicial review if it's not done properly. But this was a smaller engagement, which had 2,600 responses. But that was ignored. So the following year, they spent £150,000 with a group to do another consultation process, which wasn't actually a consultation, which had included things like plasticine workshops and people coming from other places. I don't know. They even gave vouchers to people from Lawrence Weston to come and comment on the Western Harbour, and they had meetings with the elders of Easton. You know, another way of not holding a consultation. So they've now gone forth with trying to get money for a master plan for the Western Harbour without actually having a consultation, promising one after the fact.
For people living in the harbour, I know there's around about 100 people here, Mandy, how is this whole, having to pay rent increase for anybody of 350% is, you know, quite a lot of people are just going to say, right, well, I'm up sticks, I'm off.
Yeah, I imagine that is the case. I have heard there's a fair few number of boats which are actually being put up for sale since all this has happened. So this is just going to push the people that can't stomach the challenge, or have just had enough, or they just can't afford it. It's going to push a whole load of people out, which is just really sad.
Now, Sabina, I know you've got boats in other places, and how does Bristol compare to them? You know, because obviously wherever you're moored, you've got to deal with the local authorities. So how does it compare?
There's no comparison at all in terms of facilities, in terms of liaison with Harbour Office, communication, letting us know when water's going to be turned off, how much to electricity per meter. I asked this question of the Harbour Master about 6 weeks ago. We still don't know how much electricity per meter we're paying. It's just no comparison. And as for facilities, when I asked in the explanation period, which is after everything had been signed, how we could justify charging these fees, he said because, Harbourmaster said, because of the improvements that are going to be made. So I likened it to if you were booking a hotel or bed and breakfast for years and years and years, and one year you rang up and they said it was going to be £600 or £1,000 more this time, you say, why is that? And they say, because next year we're going to build a swimming pool. Well, you go to the hotel where the swimming pool's been built. You wouldn't be asked to be paying for something that isn't there now.
How have you, because you have to deal with the people, the harbour authorities or the mooring authorities everywhere, don't you?
Yes. In Tollesby Marina, for instance, we have a boat in Essex. One time the code key for the showers wasn't working. So when I got back, I emailed the harbour office. And they said, oh, we're ever so sorry to hear about this. And this is, there is another place that you can shower, use your facilities. They gave me the number of it. They said, if anything at any time happens again, do not hesitate to contact me. Now, somebody had a problem with the gates on the boat the other day, and it was...
This is access to the I don't know what they're called, those little pontoons.
Pontoons the other day, and they just got a letter really saying, we've looked, it's okay, it's fixed, it's working now. Although the fellow had said it is temperamental and in cold weather it doesn't work, can you sort it? They just got a Kerr email to say it's fixed now. And nothing compared to the letter that I got from Tollesby, which I'm ever so sorry to hear that, that this has happened. Do not hesitate to contact us if this happens again. It was just complete, you know.
What about, Mandy, what about this character, Tony Nichols, the harbour master? Because he seems to be a quite an important character. Chatting to the former mayor, George Ferguson, he said that he very rarely, if ever, used to turn up at meetings that he was supposed to be at the council.
I met the harbour master at one of the sharing information sessions that they hosted the other week as part of their engagement post-decision being made. And other than when I first bought my vessel... then no, I've not really met him or don't really know him.
Sabina, you did, didn't you, when he asked you to leave the harbour. What was, just take us through that story.
I have a boat and it's a wooden boat, and I do believe that the harbour master perhaps doesn't like wooden boats. And I did have it out for some refurbishment, and while it was at the end of the harbour and it was just coming to the end of the refurbishment, I got a letter to say that you cannot return to your mooring unless you have your engine fixed in working order, which was a bit of a surprise because I do know that some boats don't have any engines at all. So the outcome of basically was that I did say to him, look...
So the point is that you don't really need the engine. Why you don't actually need it to be working? You don't need to keep servicing it all the time. Anyway, so what did you say to him?
Well, the harbour master refused to meet with me despite me trying countless times. He was always in a meeting. He wouldn't meet with me. So I was able to meet with his deputies... And I did ask them how many boats were in the harbour. They said 500. Then I asked them how many letters they'd sent to all those boats asking them to remove their vessels if their engine wasn't working. And they said no, well, they didn't answer. answer.
Can't answer, can they? Because they're trying to single you out. I mean, this is interesting, Mandy, isn't it? Because you've been, as the campaign has been building to stop the mooring fees hike, you've been getting all sorts of people coming out of the woodwork recounting similar stories about their treatment over the years.
Yeah, I mean, since we set up the association, and just looking back, we set up the association purely because the Harbour Review was meant to be happening and this consultation window was meant to be happening. And that's why we formed, because we wanted to be involved in the consultation. Over that time now, we've got 150 members, we have regular meetings, and the more and more people I speak to, there's individual stories like you've just heard there of what seems like just discrimination against individual boat owners. And when you feel like you're out there on your own, it's a hard battle. But once people start getting together and sharing these stories, you realise that this is a bit more of a blanket problem across the whole harbour.
I think sometimes if you've got a common enemy, it does bring people... You know, and the City Council shouldn't be a common enemy, should it? It should be there caring and nurturing the city. But you've decided that you're going to actually start taking the council on through the courts, particularly because they've just failed to do the consultation that, I'm no lawyer, but a lot of the lawyers have been commenting that actually this is a statutory process that they should go through, that they've just decided they're going to just sort of sidestep.
Yes, yeah, so they're claiming now that as a harbour authority, they're not legally bound to consult, but they have promised time and time and time again as part of the harbour review there was going to be a thorough consultation. That's the whole reason why we formed. You know, we wouldn't have the association if it wasn't for this review and this proposed consultation. So it's really disappointing that we've got to this point. It's never what I dreamed would happen. I thought we were going to be fully engaged in a consultation and this was going to revitalise the whole area. And just more and more now I'm feeling like the people on the boats and the businesses here are just not a valued part of the harbour. And it's just really sour. It's really sour, and I'm really sad that it's got to this position. But we've fought and fought and fought to try and get some sort of engagement and communication going on with the harbour.
You've got some pretty good connections out there in the city too. I think there's a lot of people understand your plight.
So we've launched a campaign. So off the back of our petition, we have launched a crowd justice appeal to try and raise some funds for our legal fight, really. So we just really want the council to engage in the consultation that they've promised, and we'd love the fees to be reasonable. We don't think that they can just make up fees based on other marinas and markets around the country. It would be nice if the fees were not against fee increases, but they have to be reasonable and they have to be with enough notice. And if only they consulted with their people, they would have half a chance of understanding and better knowing these waters, because I think the users have always got that inside information that the managers or the people above don't necessarily have a sight on.
And the mayor was hinting, wasn't he, that actually people who live in boats are kind of freeloaders, basically, living in what should be much more expensive properties in the harbour. I mean, how did you take that?
That's just really unfair. I mean, my boat is the harbour of BS1. We're right in the middle of the city. It's a fantastic place to be. My vessel is, without a doubt, an affordable means of accommodation. There's no chance on earth I could afford one of the houses that's opposite my boat. It's 10 times the value of my vessel, those homes. They're nearly £1 million. But the fees, as they are reasonable and affordable, and that's why we're in this situation when there's nearly 60 vessels being used as homes for over 100 people. But by setting these fees at this market rate sort of comparison of private marinas, it's just outpricing a huge amount of people that are living on the docks.
Well, look, the irony is, the week before this was announced, the council had a debate and approved a motion saying that there should be fair rents in the city. There have to be fair rents in the city. And then what they're doing is they're putting up your mooring fees by up to 350%.
Part of the issue is that a boat isn't classed as a home. And this controversy between the leisure licence and the residential licence, currently as it stands, they are the same price. So those 8 residential licences in the harbour pay the same price as if you've got a leisure licence. So that is a myth, and that's something that the mayor has quoted, is that the people living on leisure licences are freeloading. We're paying the same price. It's literally just the wording on the licence paper itself. And with these fee increases that are coming, the only proposal is that the wording on the licence paper is going to change, but we pay 3 times the price. So there's a couple of things I've asked for, like the new licence category for liveaboard mooring, fantastic. It's what a lot of people would jump at if it was affordable. But how are you going to provide an address for these people? Where's the postal service going to be? What about the bins and the rubbish and all those other services that you need to enable you to to live where you're living quite easily. And the concept of having an address attached to such liveaboard vessel, they didn't have an answer for. It was like, oh right, yeah, okay, I'll write that one down, shall I? It's like, you need to be generating addresses for these vessels and have some sort of postal service for them to actually use their boat as their home. But with Tom Renard, the housing, and it was, yeah, the rent control thing, it just doesn't seem to be applicable. No one from the housing authority wants to be involved. I've emailed Tom Renard a number of times and he's just bounced on the email to the mayor. If they're legitimately hoping to accommodate boat dwellers and for them to use boats as a form of housing, why are they not shouting from the rooftops in terms of providing accommodation for all these people?
Well, they're in denial, I think. If you go up onto the Downs, you can see a lot of people living in vans and things, in caravans actually now. There's something like 70 caravans up there. And there is an aspect to this which may turn, I mean, it might, because obviously if you're wealthy and you can afford to just park your boat here, you might only use it once or twice a year somewhere like Portishead. So it's almost as if they're saying it's, you know, this is where we want to go, somewhere where there's a lots of wealthy people can park their boats, but people can't live here.
And that's my worry going forward, is this strategy of increasing the fees without including its people. It's going to push out those that can't afford it or those that aren't sort of strong enough to stand together, and we're going to be left with vessel owners, which the vessel is their second home or their toy on the weekend, rather than the people that are here, which are using their boats as their primary accommodation.
If you look around some of these marinas, you think, well, you know, someone has got, is so wealthy they've even forgotten that they've got a boat,
and they rarely use their vessels, just when the sun's shining or on the bank holiday weekend, you know, whereas the people that we've got on the boats in the harbour are here day in, day out. And it's that element of security all around the quayside as well, that you've got people on boats. Just before Christmas, we had a lot of antisocial behaviour in Redcliffe along Merchant's Landing, where the houses and the vessels were being targeted for like 2 weeks. And the first people out are the ones that are staying on board. Yeah, and everyone really pulled together over that time. Lots of the commercial vessels were trashed and the private vessels, and the houses had their windows broken in for 2 weeks. And everyone sort of pulls together. But if those vessels were just dormant, then they would have been completely trashed. There wouldn't have been people on the edge of the quayside able to sort of deal with these problems.
Joanne, there is an element of almost social cleansing going on here. It's going to completely change, if the council get their way, completely change the character of the harbour.
Yes, definitely. And it's gentrification. I mean, it's inequality in terms of, you know, physical land. That's what's happening here. And it's part of a strategy that the whole harbour side is being changed. And we can also see it in the expanse of the licenses for premises, for alcohol bearing premises around the harbour side, the way that residents are being kind of pushed out and prioritizing nightclubs and establishments. We have a nighttime economy advisor now, part of it's kind of a nighttime tar, the same way they have in London, they have in Manchester. And that's all part of this program, you know, being pushed by a consultant called Sound Diplomacy, and also supported by LNG. LNG are very much...
Legal in general,
yes. Kind of insurance company, but they also do housing. They're involved in Temple Island. And they're also involved in kind of the promotion of city centre regeneration. And for us, city centre is very much part of the harbour. So it's an extension of it. What you see in the harbour, that gentrification, is the same thing you see with the boats, trying to push residents out in favour of leisure economies.
Well, we in St Paul's call it the nightmare economy, because actually what's been going on is quite a lot of new venues have been opening up, making a lot of noise. I mean, particularly, you know, finding it where people come out of the venues to smoke, and in the summer evenings, it can be really difficult to get, when you've got licences up to 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. This is the commercialisation of areas where people need to live, and I think the same seems to be happening in the harbour.
Oh, definitely. And if you look just down, you know, kind of the next street past the harbour, down in Millennium Promenade, one of the buildings has tried to kind of limit residents going through. They've tried to fence it off, saying this is a private route. And that's fine for them if they can do it, but opposite there is social housing. So when this area was set up, not even that long ago, it was you know, under Labour, just after 2000, it was another $130 million project to create all these residences and all these big buildings. And it was meant to be for residents. It was the idea was to bring in residential. There are three schools around here, three primary schools, Hotwell, St. George and Cathedral. you know, it wasn't intended for what they're doing now. The change in this area has been kind of permeating the whole place. And that's very much what we're seeing. And there's, and part of it is looking at also who's involved in the plans for this. There's a city centre strategic forum with the University of Bristol involved, Merchant Venturers, Business West, Marty Burgess from Lakota. And it's these kind of nightclubs and property developers that are leading the strategy.
And well, that's not what I'm saying. Is that's not what local authorities, city councils are supposed to do. They're collecting taxes, and what they're supposed to be doing with that is to be pushing back against some of these purely commercial interests. Surely, what they seem to have got it all back to front.
They do. I think the local authorities very much feel like they've been captured by kind of property interests and nighttime economy interests, and that's why we're seeing these policies now. The kind of residents are being pushed aside and commercial enterprises are being prioritized.
Yeah. Just before we started, we were chatting about the idea in the 1970s to fill in the harbour.
Yes. Yeah, well, very much, I think.
This is basically creating new bits of land that can then be sold off for millions of pounds an acre.
Well, they did cover up the Froom, didn't they?
They also covered over the centre a bit earlier, didn't they, where the Froom was?
Yeah, that's where the...
Just next to St Mary on the Quay Church.
Yeah, that's why the Quay is now by concrete.
Yeah. Well, this is a great way of creating new real estate out of mud, you know. So, I mean, that's. But the thing is, that isn't really taking into account the character of the city and preserving the history of the city.
No, it's not. It's very much changing the use of the city centre and the harbour.
But the mayor will say, yeah, but we've got cranes on the horizon.
Yes, but we've also, as we've seen with the Clarion Housing on Bath Road, the cranes on the horizon don't always point to good things. I mean...
No, this is the one that seems to be sliding into the Avon, even though it was the mayor's flagship social housing project. Anyway, look, Mandy, you know, you must be in a situation, and many of your friends must be in the situation where you're just thinking, look, let's switch the engine on and chug off up the canal to Bath or somewhere else.
It's crossed my mind, yeah, a number of times. But this is my home, and this is where I want to be. This is where my kids go to school. This is where my job is. And this is my life. This is my community. It's where I want to stay. But it's been a tough road, and it's very tempting to up sticks, but I'm not going to.
What about you, Sabina?
I've been here 20 years. I've lived on a boat for 20 years. My family are here. I love the city. Yes, I'm going to stay, whatever it takes. But it's just a bit naughty. It's just as you were saying, Marvin said the other day that he keeps trying to solve the housing crisis, but everybody gets in his way and makes it impossible. But now, really, I would say that he's just rubber-stamped another housing crisis.
So, Mandy, whereabouts do we find the crowdfunding?
Crowdfunding can be found on Bristol Boaters website, and it's on crowdjustice.com, and it's called Help Bristol's Harbour Community Defend Democracy.
That's right. In fact, all of us are trying to do that around the city. Some don't. But anyway, the Bristol Boaters website is
bristolboaters.org.
Mandy Sharman, Sabina Douglas and Joe Booth, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.